Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nate Sanderson.
In this episode, we discuss practical ideas to help you develop as a coach and build your team's culture. Now, we want to get you out of here in 30 minutes or less, so let's get started.
You're listening to episode 75, Performance is a Behavior, Not an Outcome, with our guest, Mark Bennett. If you haven't had the chance yet, I would highly recommend you go back to episode 73, Coaching Your Way Out of a Job. And that was the first part of our conversation with Mark Bennett. But we're back with Mark today to dive more into some great systems to build our culture. So let's jump into, you've kind of talked a little bit about this in that kind of last conversation about unacceptable, acceptable, exceptional, which I love those terms. I use them all the time with other coaches, and I'm constantly sharing some of your content on that. I really kind of jump into this idea around behavioral change. And one of your favorite quotes that I love is performance is a behavior, not an outcome. Talk to us a little bit about that and how you start to work with coaches and then help the coaches to work with the players when it comes to behavioral change.
Yeah, so there's two things to that statement, and I'll break that down. Think of it this way, is that the sequence to effective outcomes is behavior first, then performance, then outcome. So if we think about the behavior, performance is a behavior, not an outcome. Take any sport. So let's use basketball. Great example. Everyone's seen basketball. If you ask a coach that says, look, Mark, it's the score line that's important to me. Winning is what's important to me. I said, okay, fantastic. So how do you win games? So, well, we score more than the opposition. Okay, so let's look at the attack part of that. How do you score? Well, we get the ball into the basket. Okay, but how do you get the ball into the basket? Well, okay, so the players have to do that, yes. So what are they going to do? Well, they need to move the ball up near the D. And okay, so now what do they need to do? Well, they need to start making good choices. Okay, and can they be lazy when they make that choice? Do they need a good frame of mind to make that choice? Will pressure affect them? Will their state affect it? Yes, it will, Mark. Okay. So what you're saying is they need to be in a good state, make an effective choice. Can they kind of commit to it, or must they commit to 100%? They've got to commit to 100%. Can they do that on their own, or do they need the players around them to support them to understand how to do that and be consistent over the whole game? Oh, definitely, Mark. So let's look at the transition. Is there any difference with the transition? No. Defense? No difference. So what you're telling me is, to get the outcomes you want, i.e. scoring more baskets than the opposition, what underlines that is athletes being in an effective state, controlling their emotional intelligence effectively, making good choices because they're in a good state, and executing with intent and working together to keep each other in that type of loop as a team. Every coach will say yes, as well, that's behaviors. So the reality is, it's the behaviors that drive effective choices and the ability to commit to those choices and evaluate the choice live. Those will give you the performance you need, and then the performance will maximize the result. Now, you can't guarantee you're ever going to win, but you can guarantee you can play the best you can play based on it's the behaviors that drive that. So if you think of it this way, in a timeout, a coach can come in, the players have got poor behavioral state, they haven't committed to any tactics, and you will get coaches still talking tactics in a timeout. Well, my argument is look, if they're not committing to anything, you can give them any tactic you want. They're still not going to commit to it. So the problem is not the tactics. The problem is the commitment. What's causing lack of commitment? Okay, managing their state, making a choice, committing to the choice. So why don't we discuss that and not the tactics? Back to behaviors.
I love that. And one of the things I've heard you talk about on John O'Sullivan's podcast and Stewart's is non-negotiables. And, you know, I love a quote from John Wooden where he talked about how, you know, as time went on, he had less, you know, when he first started off in coaching, he had a lot of rules and few suggestions. And the more he coached, he had more suggestions and fewer rules. But he still, at the end of the day, always had his non-negotiables. And I've always encouraged coaches to have a few non-negotiables for in their program. That's how I've kind of viewed non-negotiables. You know, for me, it's always, you know, being on time, competing, and making sure that you're listening. Listening to coaches, listening to each other. Those are kind of my non-negotiables. But I think you have a little bit of a different take on non-negotiables and kind of setting those first when it comes to behavioral change. Can you share some of that?
Yeah, so the non-negotiables should be only one or two elements, possibly three. that if you ask any team, and they have to own these, they have to come up with them, you just guide them and have the discussion, is what are the one or two things that if you did this consistently well would maximize your performance and your outcomes? So it's the behaviors that drive that. So once you understand what they are, then we say, okay, we always put them first. So whether we review anything, whether we're questioning ourselves, it doesn't matter. We always drive our non-negotiables every single day, every time, every moment, not just on court, on pitch. I literally, anywhere. When you wake up in the morning, you go into bed, because it's behavior, it's a non-negotiable. So what you could do is, it could be as simple as being the present, could be a non-negotiable. If you have a team that actually sometimes is often negatively reacted because they're still reflecting on a bad decision or something they did, or a referee decision, or a coach decision, or their bad commitment to something that they did 5-10 seconds ago. And that's negatively impacting on their here and now. So one of the non-negotiables for them would be always be present. So we're just saying, are you present? So another one might be, are you living excellence? So when I work with Cleveland Indians, one of the coaches, Matt, was working with the community impact. He came up with, which is great, he came up with ACE. So ACE was a set of three words that drove excellence based on the attitude, the communication, the effort. So they understood what that is. They drew the picture. So for him, all he had to say in his coaches and players to players is, are we being ACE right now? Show me ACE right now. Because everyone knew what ACE was, but it was behavioral driven focus. If we did this, we know everything else gets easier. So it's always a behavioral non-negotiable that you can live with in every single moment.
Can you give us an example of, say, a football coach in America wants to get his players or his team to set some non-negotiables of what that conversation would look like? And, you know, yeah, just kind of give us a rundown of that.
So it's having a conversation. It's always worth taking, even if you drop a whole coaching session to nail this, is just asking them, whether they're new or often you don't get a full new team, you get people from the past, is ask them in the past, last season, wherever you were playing, is what are the common elements that when you're doing excellent, you knew you were doing this well? When you were unacceptable, when things weren't going well, when you knew you were underperforming, what were the common traits? If you look back, you would say, this is what we weren't doing. So forget the odd tactic, the actual underpinning element that caused you to either, you knew it when you were awesome, and you knew it when you were unacceptable. And you're asking them to just think and reflect in that way. So everyone's got past experience. They all recognize that. And then we're asking them, okay, can we define what they look like? And then if we've got 10 or 11, we're asking, okay, so we've got 10, 11, that's great. If we could only pick one, which would be the one? If we nail this every single time, like it's a heartbeat, we're living it every single moment, which one of these 10 would give us the biggest impact, the biggest bang for our buck? And they say, and you'll get to a point where you might get down to one or two, but generally everyone agrees that one. So, okay. So if we live this, could we live it? Is it something that we can't do, or something if we all committed to it together as a team, we could bring this alive and this could become us in every single moment? And if they say yes, then okay, so that would be a non-negotiable. But here's the challenge now, is if they say, yeah, we could, we got to ask, okay, whatever we agree now, we're going to live by. We have to do it every single time. And then we bring in the rule of three, which is a support mechanism, which we can talk about that later. But it's what we agree, we have to live by every single moment. And when it's tough, we can't give up on it. We have to look for it first, in games, in training, with me as a coach, with you as athletes, because we all have to live it. It's not just athletes, it's all of us. So it's really tying down to, yes, now we know this is the one. We know if we nail this every single time, it will give us the biggest bang for our buck. It will have a huge impact on us. But also, are we ready to commit to this? Because it has to be every time. And that's how tight that conversation has to be.
Now, I know some black coaches are like, okay, well, how do we enforce that? And that kind of is going to get into a little bit later when we talk about the rule of three. I know, that, and then some other, we'll have some other questions on there. There's another thing you talk about, non-negotiables, but then there's EAUs. Correct, if I'm correct.
UAEs.
UAEs. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Share a little bit about UAEs, the difference between UAEs and your non-negotiables, and how you're kind of setting those.
So a non-negotiable is one or two that runs for everything. So you look at that all the time first, and always behavior driven. So that in itself can have a UAE. So a UAE is an unacceptable, an acceptable, and an excellence. It might only have unacceptable, unacceptable. But it's understanding what it looks like. So whatever words we use, even if it's non-negotiable, if we nail to that, we need to know what it looks like. So what would be unacceptable? What would that look like? Give me some examples, team. Talk to me about the warm-up. Talk to me about in training. Talk to me about when we're down in a match or we're up in a match, whatever it might be. Give examples so they can go, it would look like this, coach. So what would excellence look like in that? They give you the picture. So we all understand the clarity on terminology. Now, where the UAE's come in really well is, and this goes into another element, is before we start every session, everyone needs to understand what success looks like for that session. And this is where I get a bit frustrated when someone says, well, the aim, it's an aim mark. So, well, okay, it's only an aim if you can show what it looks like. So we always say at the beginning of the session is, oh, and you might have five in a session segment, but at the beginning of every segment, we need to go, guys, success for this phase is this. What does this look like? And then once we develop this athlete-centered approach, they'll be able to tell us, okay, so what would be acceptable or unacceptable for us in this? What would be excellent? So everyone knows what it looks like. So then we can hold some accountability, which is where the rule of three comes in, is okay, so what ifs now? What if we drop to unacceptable in this? What do you want to do? Let's agree. What are we going to do? So we have the picture before every phase. So you'll never go into a part of a training session where you've got some player wandering around whispering into the other player, what is it we meant to be doing here? You know, are we waiting for coach to tell us if we're wrong? I'm not quite sure. So we have clarity at the beginning, every single phase of anything we're doing in training. And we set them in games as well. So in games we can have, okay, what would be success for us in this game? Which may have nothing to do with the scoreline. It may be something we're driving. It may be transition period or something. It may be in certain situations, we're going to make sure we nail this, something we've worked on in training. It may be a behavior thing of, okay, so coaches, what's going to be the UAEs for coaches in this? So if you've got a coach that's very fiery, it might be, okay, everyone is to be present, coach. So coaches might be to be present. Okay, so if I'm not, what are we agreeing? Assistant coach nails you, taps you, tells you pineapple, which has been used. So it's a word where you can go, okay, I know I have to accept. Players, you're giving them permission to say, and this is a thing you can do. If it's one of those moments, I can go to coach, go, coach, it's one of those moments, and I have to accept from the players because they're recognizing now I'm emotionally fired up. I'm now making poor choices. So it can be anything like that, but the picture is, we need to know what the picture is. What's acceptable, unacceptable? What do they look like? And if there is an exception, what does that look like? Because we want to stretch for that. And then we just connect with what if. What if we are unacceptable? What are we agreeing here? What are we going to do? So there's clarity before we start each phase. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I love how you're empowering not just the players, but your coaching staff as well. And you're doing this by asking questions and getting, you know, your staff as a coaching staff to define the acceptable and unacceptable behaviors of a coach. And then you're also asking the players. And then as we're about to jump into in a second here, you have that opportunity where people can give each other feedback in the moment, right? In the moment, not so much delayed feedback, but in that moment, give them feedback so they can make the quick adjustment.
Yes, and also remember, UAEs can be used for tactical and technical as well. So if you're learning a new transition defense or some attacking zone, whatever it might be, you can still say, okay, success for us is working on this, some attacking phase. Okay, for us to be effective in this, what would be unacceptable for us? So they may say, pulling into the center, not maintaining our width. Okay, what would be excellent? Okay, us driving, expanding for the ball, moving the ball fast, to using full width and communicating. So if there's a break off, people are recognizing it and passing it out or kicking it out fast. Great. So now we know what it looks like. So then we can drive it.
I had my niece, she's on a rowing team, a collegiate rowing team, one of the best in the country, actually. And she reached out to me, kind of explaining that her team was having some issues. Right, they weren't essentially at acceptable behaviors in the boat and out of the boat, right? You know, in the social scene, all that. People weren't training, they weren't eating like they should be. And then in training, people were cutting corners. And so she kind of described this meeting where a coach brought them all together, the coach brought them all together and asked them to define acceptable and unacceptable. Just those, use those exact terms. And I'm listening to her tell the story and I'm thinking about you and I'm thinking, oh, this stuff's great, right? Like they're here, they're identifying it. And so she kind of explains this whole team meeting, how they went through it. They clarified their behaviors. And then she said, and the meeting was horrible, And I was like, what do you mean? Why was it horrible? Like, that sounds very productive. And she says, because we've missed the point here. We're not at this stage. We're not rowing for each other. We're not in the boat rowing for each other. And that kind of struck me. Since then, they've had some turnarounds, I think, as well. But I don't know, I'm just curious of what your thoughts were on her take there.
Well, her take is they didn't discuss one of the key elements that she had frustrations with. They discussed the other elements. So there was no UAEs put on the selfless part of being in a team. So there was focus on the selfish part, which was I need to eat, I need to train, I need to commit to be the best athlete I can. That's the selfish bit, which is a great element of an athlete. But where's the selfless part? So there was no discussion about, okay, all the things she was frustrated with, and it was not brought up on that meeting. So for me, there's two things that say that. The coach didn't do his homework first, otherwise he'd have picked that up and scanning for it. But then secondly, the environment wasn't such where she could bring that up. She felt she could talk to you, but she couldn't talk in that room to coach and the players about it.
Yeah, and I think that's huge, because I think you touched on how you could be defining behaviors around tactical and technical, which,
yeah,
and here are some of the training methods that they were using as well.
Yeah.
But they didn't really talk about some of those other like selfless behaviors of what it means to be like a really great teammate.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where that rule of three connects back in then, because you're living it. You can't hide from it. So it becomes very alive for the coach. It can't be a hidden thing, because people will be discussing it straight away. But there's always, if there's issues where the player feels that they cannot talk to coach or other players in an open forum about something they feel very strongly about, then there's something wrong with the culture.
And this is a question I have too, because you have such a wide breadth of experience at different levels and with different sports. You know, when we think about some of the most successful sports organizations in the last, you know, 10 to 20 years in the United States, you think about the San Antonio Spurs, you think about the New England Patriots, you think about the Golden State Warriors, you know, in basketball over the past few years. And I wonder if some of the things that you're talking about here in terms of them being able to identify almost organizationally their non-negotiables, that the expectations aren't just for the athletes in terms of their behaviors, but also the coaches are bought in, the front office is bought in. Do you see that as a pattern in some of the organizations that you work with, that this is something that becomes a way of life all through the entire club or the entire group?
Yes, definitely. You when you know what to look for, you see it. It jumps out at you so clearly. Not what someone tells you when you first go in on the "Hello, we're great" day. Actually, what you see day in, day out. And with these successful organizations, you do see it. You live it. And as you said, it's not just the coaches. It's the administration team. It's everyone. It's the rep. It's the agent. It's the clothing manager, the kit guy. Everyone's in this inclusion of everyone's help, doing the best they can for their job, but helping each other be the best they can be. So what does that look like? How do we live it? So like Spurs, it was interesting because when I was working with Cleveland Indians, they gave me some great tickets to watch the Cavs, and it was a Cavs-Spurs match at home. And the difference, this was last season, the difference between the engagement of the players with the Spurs team and the Cavaliers team was you couldn't be more opposite. As soon as the players were finishing our timeout, all the players were jumping off the bench of the Spurs. There was hand touches, eye contact. As soon as their coach started to talk, everyone was engaged. Now, he was quite direct. Interestingly, you picked him up because he can be quite autocratic and aggressive on court. But you can see he must be doing the rapport and the development and the friendship and the respect mutually in training because of the engagement he had. So it's clear he set parameters of what's acceptable, unacceptable. They didn't do it on the court. He's now holding them accountable to what clearly they've pre-agreed, and he's nailing them on it. But no one was turning their head. Their head was not going down. They were asking questions direct to the other supporting team. You can tell the environment they have to live that. And it goes back to one of the key points we initially picked up on is you can't try this in training on match day. If you're not living it in every single training session, it does not work. So for someone to say, so what you're saying to me, Mark, is when it comes to a timeout, I don't say anything. I just say, guys, review and let them work it out. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is you have to develop the culture so it's an every time thing in every moment of every communication, even in Slack group, WhatsApp groups. So the teams I work with, After every single session, the coaches are hot reviewing and communicating, how can I get better, what recognize, self first, then other team coaches, then team. After every single game, the players review on their Slack and WhatsApp groups, self first, then the team, then coaches. They review the coaches, and the coaches listening to it pick up on it. Because it's saying, everyone, we all want to get better. So is there something you can't tell me and you want to, that you feel is important to you? Then if you can't and you feel you can't, the culture's wrong. So those type of teams you spoke about, there's no question the culture is right there, and they have to live it every single day.
I love that example that you gave from the Cavs-Spurs game. I mean, it's so funny because, you know, Nate and I have talked extensively about the book Culture Code by Daniel Coyle. And in that book, Coyle actually says, you know, culture, it's not something you are, it's something you do. It's not something you are, it's something you do. He comes back to the behaviors, which is falling directly in line with the things that you've observed. And I think that's just so critical.
It was interesting, actually, because I joint presented with Daniel about 10 years ago of an annual England Golf Conference, and that was the first time I met him. And it's interesting how he's gone on and, you know, carried on these observations, and I've gone on to develop an applicational tool that brings his observations to life. So it's interesting there's a connection there, really.
Yeah, and just one thing to touch on there, too, that you talked about is this relationship of this place of safety where people feel safe. Before we jump into the rule three, or maybe this is going to be fit right into rule three, is how do you create a, you know, what kind of things do you have for us on creating a place where people do feel safe to be able to do those things?
It's always, I look at it as seeking opportunities. So you lay the parameters down at the very beginning of when you start an interaction with a new group of players, of sharing expectation from them, from you. The point of you're a human being, you're not the finished article yet, and the only way you can get better and know if you're great is feedback from the players. And this is a communication between us all, because we all want to be the best we can be, and sharing what excellence is and what it looks like, which is all great, and some people say that. But here's the thing. Then the coach searches for the opportunities to find those opportunities of conflict, of when someone isn't saying anything, when someone is a bit annoyed and they're not saying it, and he reaches out using the rule of three to make sure there's a positive reinforcement when the first person steps up and does it. And he makes sure every other player sees it. So all of a sudden they go, whoa, this is real. Someone's just stepped up and challenged coach because he's given them permission to, and coach has hand touched them, accepting, go, yeah, good point, didn't see that. Okay, brilliant, thank you. And it's those connection processes of finding the opportunities to positive reinforce the very mechanism and environment and atmosphere you want is going to reinforce it to the players. They need to experience it. They need to see it. If you just talk about it but don't seek those opportunities will be missed, because everyone will be standing watching, waiting. Who's the first going to do it? Is this going to be real, or are we just going to go back again? And it, as a coach, you need to be really cunning. And so I've seen some coaches seek opportunities, falsified opportunities to bring it alive, so players can go, oh, this is real. Fantastic. So that's being smart as a coach, I feel.
So, Nate, Mark's given us a lot of things here, a lot of kind of systems for helping us to establish our standards and our non-negotiables in our program. You've got a lot of experience in this. What did you kind of take away from Mark's discussion with us today?
Well, JP, I think the thing that I would encourage coaches to do is to really be deliberate about identifying and prioritizing the non-negotiables or the standards that they think are most important for implementing into their culture where they're at right now. I remember back to starting earlier in my career, and when I really started learning and thinking about the kind of culture and behaviors and attitudes I wanted from our players, I had a list of, you know, seven core values and the behaviors that came off of them, and tried to get all of those put in 1 year, you know, that we were going to establish this great culture based on these seven things. And it was just too much. It was way too much, right? Way too much for me to manage, way too much for me to teach, way too much for us to discuss as a team. And so I've really backed away from that, I guess, over the last 8 or 10 years, really with this idea of, we can really only implement probably three things at a time. Like, that's my capacity as a coach, is to be able to pay attention to three pieces of culture that we want to be established. So even when I started at Linmar last year, you know, coming in off the street and building a culture from scratch, the number one thing for me was, and I told the kids this, I will fight for your eyes. Like, eye contact was the number one thing that was going to be our first non-negotiable. And then, you know, we had two other things that we were going to really start in that first summer, saying, like, these are the things that we're going to do every day. And so that was it. We just worked on those three things. And then once we didn't really have to fight for their eyes anymore, we went back to the list and we looked at number four and we started introducing that and then talking about what that might look like. So we were working on two, three, and four. And then when we felt like, you know, the third thing was really well established, then we'd go to number five. But we never really tried to do more than three things at a time. And the other thing that we did that I thought was really effective last year after our first season is we met with our coaches, and at the different levels, our fresh soft level, our JV level, and our varsity level, we really mapped out a curriculum, and not just of our offensive and defensive systems, but we literally wrote, you know, it, as freshmen, they have to learn effort, celebration, and eye contact. Like, those are the three things that for them to be able to function in our culture moving forward in the program that they have to know and start with in the beginning. And so if that's all they learn their freshman year, then that was the foundation that we wanted. And then we look at the JV level, like, what's the next thing? You know, what are the next few things that if they don't pick up there, that Coach Tompkins picks up there, right? And then at the varsity level, obviously, we continue to layer into that. But that was really helpful for our lower level coaches to understand kind of their role in being able to put those things in, so that they built and added together as kids would go through the different levels of our program.
Yeah, and I love that. I think what's really cool is in our next episode with Mark, he's going to dive much more into the systems of kind of how we enforce these type of things. But something I've taken from him here, actually two things. One is I love that terminology of unacceptable, acceptable, and exceptional. I mean, I used to use in the past bad, good, and great, but I think it's so clear. I think sometimes it's hard to determine what's acceptable, like what do we want as our standards in our program. I think it's a little bit easier sometimes when we start, like he says, with things that we don't want to accept here, the unacceptable things. But even just something on kind of focusing on pinpointing what success looks like. You know, what will success look like for us this season? Or, you know, as teams are approaching the playoffs here, for many, many of the coaches that are listening to the podcast, your teams may be approaching the playoffs. And I've done this activity that I've kind of taken from my conversation with Mark, but I've done this activity with many coaches out there where you just ask your team for the next month of our season, for the next week of our season, even just for the next game, what is the most essential two things that we need to do, or three things that we need to do to be at our best, right? What are those two, three things? And typically you're going to get these generic, very general, broad answers where players like, well, we need to play hard on defense, you know, and, you know, we need to share the ball. And that's where they're going to start. But then you have to keep probing and prompting them to essentially whittle it down to something very specific. And for instance, one team had that we were working with had said, you know, we wanted to, you know, play really, really well defensively in transition. And it's like, okay, well, what does that look like? And they, you know, kept asking. Finally, they had a measurable and observable behavior, which was the first three steps in transition needs to be a dead sprint. And that was it, right? And everything else would just come together within the transition defense if we just did those first three steps right. And so it was so much more observable and measurable that I think it helps those teams to focus on the process of what they need to do to be at their best.
That's great, JP. And, you know, the last thing I would leave with coaches is when you're starting to introduce your non-negotiables, and I love the idea of having conversations with your teams about what does acceptable look like, what does unacceptable look like, what does exceptional look like. I think another really, really important piece is you have to explain the why. You know, if you're talking about your first three steps on defense, or I'm talking about eye contact, there has to be a compelling reason why this is where we begin, or why this thing is something that we will not compromise. It's not enough just to emphasize it. It's not enough just, I think, to show what it looks like or to talk about what it looks like. The players have to understand, why is this going to make a difference for our culture and for our performance? And if you don't build a great case and lead them down that road, I think sometimes it's hard to get the results that you're looking for in those areas.
Yeah, and that's it for today's episode. I'm really excited about next week's episode with Mark, as we're going to come back and we're going to be sharing his rule of three, which is an incredible system, because I know many coaches are going, all right, we have these standards, we have these non-negotiables, but how do I empower the players to hold each other accountable? And Mark's got some great tools for us. So be sure to tune in next week. In the meantime, there's a lot of notes coming from these episodes with Mark Bennett. So be sure to go to thriveonchallenge.com and subscribe to the weekly newsletter there so you don't miss these coaching notes.